Hey, we're back again with another movie review. This one is kind of a controversial
film. Oh, man. This one's like a childhood classic of mine. Dune.
Yes.
I read the book, and then I saw the movie, all right? And I loved the movie as a kid, even though I probably wouldn't have understood it had I not read the book.
Yeah, that's a very common complaint.
Dune is not a movieable story.
Yeah.
Hard to make this into a movie. It's kind of like the equivalent of trying to take the book of Genesis and making that like an hour and a half long movie.
Right.
Where you're trying to get, you know, the Garden of Eden story, the flood story, you know, stories of Abraham and then Abraham and Isaac. And then you're going to try to do, you know, the story of Joseph. You're going to try to do all that in one movie. You just can't do it.
I always kind of felt like, I mean, I read the book probably, I don't even really remember that much about it because I probably read it when I was maybe 12 or 13 years old, which was a very long time ago. Even then, I don't know, it seems to me that yes, the book is very dense and there's like a lot of shit going on, but I feel like you could make it into not a movie necessarily. I think it needs a series because it needs like a lot more room to breathe. Or if you were going to do movies, it would at least have to be a trilogy, I would think.
I think you could make this into a trilogy, a Star Wars style trilogy.
That might work.
Which, you know, when they made the movie, it was supposed to be competition for Star Wars. So right. I don't know why. You know, it's the way, you know, Dino did that kind of shit. He, you know, anything he touched basically turned to shit, all right? It either turned to gold or it turned to shit, one of the two, of course, you know, because there was some really good shit that he did. What, Conan won?
Yeah.
Did Flash Gordon.
Yeah, which he did like some cool-ass movies, yeah.
It was just that when that company screwed up, it screwed up badly. Now, Dune got a lot of things right, but it also, it got a lot of things wrong. And one of the things that really got wrong is they tried to mash that entire story into one movie to compete with Star Wars. If you're going to compete with Star Wars, make a trilogy like Star Wars was going to
be. Yeah, it's not like it was unheard of at the time. It just seems like, and the thing about Dune, it had such a, you know, complicated history. Like, it had been optioned, like, many times by many different directors. Famously, Alejandro Jodorowsky was going to do it, which actually I would have loved to have seen that because that guy makes some weird shit.
Yeah, he said it was going to be an acid trip.
Yeah, which most of his other movies are.
Yeah, it was going to have, oh, what's his name in it? Marlon Brando was going to play a role in it. A fat Marlon Brando, not skinny Marlon Brando. So that would have been a trip.
Wasn't Salvador Dali supposed to be in it at some point?
Probably.
Or something like that. That actually might have been kind of rad.
I don't know who Brando would have played. Maybe Baron Vladimir Harkonnen?
Yeah, that seems like something.
Maybe we should back up and give people kind of a little more information about Dune and what it is, because maybe some people haven't seen it. I recommend the movie in the original cut, in the theatrical cut, if you want to take it as it's a masterpiece, shitty movie. It's the best of the bad movies.
I've seen it.
It looks good. It feels good. It doesn't make any sense if you don't know what's going on.
Right. I've seen it called things like A Beautiful Disaster, that kind of thing, which seems to me a good, because it looks, I mean, other than a couple of ropey special effects, it actually still looks fantastic. Like, the set design is beautiful and the costuming is beautiful and all the actors in it are good.
Yeah.
It's just, if you hadn't read the book, even if you had read the book, you will have no fucking idea what the fuck is going on.
You'd have to see it a bunch of times to kind of get an idea of what was going on.
It's definitely something that needs repeat viewings.
Yeah, and I don't think you would really get the depth of what was going on had, you know, just on the movie alone. Because I think a lot of the stuff that I got from watching the movie is because I knew what it was talking about because I read the book. I don't know if a person who had not read the book would get that.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think, like, the original book had a fucking glossary, you guys.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? But I don't think that that is necessarily a detriment because, you know, a good trilogy was made out of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You know, they've made, like, these big, epic, sprawling movies or trilogies or series or whatever out of really complicated, dense material where there's, like, a lot of characters. Look at, like, Game of Thrones and stuff like that, where there's all these different characters and all these interconnecting storylines. It can be done.
Yeah, there's a shit ton of characters. There's a shit ton of fucking historical background. Most of the book is narrated, and there's very little conversational dialogue in it. So, very hard to make a movie out of that.
And I
it's
a
good book, but
yeah, not,
can't
hardly. Well, it's a classic book. I mean, you know, it's pretty much, you know, an acknowledged sci-fi classic.
It's like reading the Old Testament, just in and it's even in another language. Basically, there's kind of a pseudo language that Frank Herbert has made up,
right,
to describe technologies and political systems that don't exist yet, because this is thousands of years in the future.
And, you know, let me say too that, I mean, anyone that listens to the show or anything, you probably know, and I'm sure I've mentioned it before, David Lynch is probably my favorite movie director. I love pretty much every movie he's done, except this one. I don't hate it. I don't love it. This one, it just seems, well, even David Lynch himself has kind of distanced himself from it a little bit. And on some cuts of the movie, he actually used the Alan Smithy, you know, pseudonym that directors use. And he also used a pseudonym for the screenwriting credit. Yeah. He called himself Judas Booth, I think.
Yeah. Lynch, for me, is too hard to watch. I in general, don't like most of his movies. All right. I do like this one.
Yeah,
I like this one.
That's really funny.
Which I'm backwards.
It's funny because I think a lot of people complain about David Lynch's movie. Oh, you know, they don't make any sense or anything, which they do. They're just very symbolic, or they use like dreamlike logic and things like that. Right. You usually have to see them several times. And also he makes reference to a lot of other films. Mm-hmm. Too, like in, you know, because like I said, I wanted to do Mulholland Drive on this series at some point too, where he makes like a lot of references to Sunset Boulevard. And then there was Wild at Heart, where he made a bunch of references to Wizard of Oz and, you know, things like that. So you kind of have to have like a, you know, a knowledge of a lot of other film, a lot of other films and a lot of other things to, you know, understand the symbolism and stuff that he's doing. And at this point, when he made Dune, I'm pretty sure, I think at this point, he had made Eraserhead, obviously. He had made The Elephant Man.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, I think those are the only two major films he had made. He hadn't made Blue Velvet yet. Because this was Kyle MacLachlan, who plays Paul Atreides in Dune. This was actually his first movie.
Yeah, he does a good job.
And Kyle MacLachlan would obviously go on to work with David Lynch a lot more. He was in Blue Velvet, obviously, and he would play Agent Dale Cooper on Twin Peaks in 1990 and in the new one also. And there are a ton of other actors in this movie that David Lynch worked with again and again. He had like a stable of actors that he liked to use. But I think the main mistake, and I don't know if this was necessarily his decision. I mean, David Lynch did write the screenplay. His original screenplay, I think, was a movie about 4 hours long, give or take. You know, because like I said, it's a very dense book. It took him like 6 months to write it. And I kind of feel like maybe he was kind of pushed into this decision, but I don't like that so much of the movie is conveyed in people's like voiceovers, like they're thinking.
Like they're thinking about it. But that's kind of the way the book was. So
I know.
They shouldn't have done that. But
yeah, but that's the thing. And I think, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but, you know, there's kind of a big difference about what works in a book and what works in a movie. And if there's a book where it just has, it's mostly people's internal monologues and things like that, which like a lot of Stephen King books are like that, where a lot of it's just inside a person's head. But in a movie, that tends not to work very well.
No,
it comes across as very cheesy, very forced and contrived. And I kind of wish he had found another way to get a lot of the information across.
But on the other hand, it doesn't work that well, okay? But it does give this weird air of self-importance. This movie's taking itself very seriously.
Oh, okay?
Almost kind of like it's the Old Testament. That's what it is. This is the Old Testament.
It does come across that way.
It's the science fiction Old Testament. Everything that's being said is some kind of a meme, some kind of a religious.
It's a pronouncement.
Religious pronouncement from a holy book. That's what everything sounds like.
No one can just like talk like regular in the movie.
No,
it's like everything has to be this big like ostentatious.
Yeah,
kind of,
you're basically seeing space kabuki.
Yeah,
you know, it's like space kabuki. but Middle Eastern. This is you know, Old Testament stuff, and it's definitely a bunch of references to a futuristic versions of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. They're referring to that a lot. A lot of the stuff that the Fremen, the things that they are saying, they're takeoffs of Arabic terms.
Yeah.
Like, instead of fedaine, they use the word fedakine. You know, that's just one of the many examples.
I've heard that.
They also straight up use the word jihad. The spice that they're mining is oil.
It's a metaphor for oil. That's just what I was going to say. Right. And yeah, that's kind of the whole book has been read as a metaphor for
Middle Eastern politics.
Middle Eastern politics and, you know, their command over the oil production and around the world and stuff like that. And like I said, on the surface, it doesn't seem like it's a complicated story, but not necessarily one that people wouldn't be able to understand. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a planet called Arrakis, otherwise known as Dune, and that's where the spice is. It's called Melange. And they use the spice to fold space. They use the spice. It's kind of like a drug.
It's a drug. You inhale it and you can see slightly into the future. And
it gives you like psychic powers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and basically it's several ruling families from different planets that are fighting over command, over control of the of this planet. And then there's also the Fremen, who are the native people of Arrakis, and they're kind of in the mix too. And they have a thing about a messiah, and Paul Atreides is supposed to be the messiah and all this other kind of stuff. So like I said, it's not, if you just read a plot synopsis, it seems like it should make sense. Like, it seems like you could make it make sense.
Right.
But then when you watch the movie, it somehow does not make sense.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I bought a collector's edition DVD. This was like from, it's not even Blu-ray, but this was from a few years back. And it came with two different versions of the movie. The theatrical release and an extended cut that most of the critics Or the Dune fanatics like this particular
cut. That was the one that was on TV, right? That they added.
No. That one had even more in it.
Yeah, because the one on TV was like they added like 45 minutes.
Because I'm generally a fan of the theatrical cut. I said, you know, I bet you the more extended cut is even better. I was wrong. More is not better in terms of Dune. Yeah. More actually makes it worse. More of the movie, the way it's cut and the way it's edited in, more information seems to... Or excuse me, what's a good way to put it? The additional scenes confuse the hell out of you unless you don't know exactly what's going on. And they're not really necessary. After having watched the extended cut, I prefer the theatrical cut better, which is imperfect. And I'm actually thinking about going back and getting the new Blu-ray edition because it's dirt cheap on eBay. I think it's like $4 or $5 or something delivered, you know. And evidently... The image quality and the sound quality is a lot better, and it's just the regular cut.
Now, the version I saw, like, we watched... What was the version? Did we watch the theatrical version, or we watched the extended
version? We watched the extended version, and it's just retarded.
Because, now, the theatrical version had the opening with Virginia Madsen, right?
That's
right. Who kind of, like, who just gave, like, a little, like, few minutes.
And that actually kind of is a classy... intro.
Yeah.
I like how that worked.
But the extended version, it kind of has this sort of sloppily put together...
Yeah, cartoons and a guy and narrating
It's like 12 or 13 minutes long.
Right. They're feeling that they have to explain the entire past 5,000 years of history.
Right.
But you know what? There was... The extended cut is cool for a guy who really has to know more about the movie. I like that concept. But on a first viewing, I wouldn't recommend the extended cut. And for people who don't know what the Dune universe is all about, it's one of the cool things about it is that it's futuristic, but there is no real technology as you would know it. Because they explain early on that thousands of years ago, you know, before their telling of this story, AI got so good that artificial and intelligent robots started to take over. And humans had to make this big uprising.
Skynet shit.
Kind of like Skynet. The thing is that the robots really were like overprotective mothers. They wouldn't let you do anything. So the people atrophied. Eventually they had a revolt. They got rid of AI. They rewrote the Bible and holy books and ingrained people with like a new religion and one of the commandments was thou shalt not make a machine in the form of the mind of a man. So in other words, no AI, no computers. And then instead of computers, they opened up all these schools to further human development. So people, they would try to turn people into astounding thinkers and athletes and basically, you know, almost kind of like Scientology level OT powers, you know. OT is operating Thetan powers or you know, magic, not really, but, you know, psychic abilities, you know, they had all that. And so the humans had unlocked their potential in many ways, but they did not allow for computers. All right. Now, when they did this, they also opened up some other weird things, like you could take a person, a dead person. They believed it was this was ethical. You could take a dead person, reanimate it, give it a bunch of drugs, send it to school, and turn it into something called a mentat, which was kind of like a zombie, but they were just mental gymnasts. And you could buy and sell one like a home computer, but only really rich people could afford them. And there are many mentats, there's several mentats in the story. And they were doing weird things like drinking the juice of Sefu, which was, it's a long story, okay? It's just, it's a blue liquid that comes out of worms, or you put a put water in a worm, a sandworm from Arrakis, and it vomits up this blue liquid, and you drink it, and your thoughts acquire speed, you know, and it's just, you just have to think real fast and real accurate.
Lots of drugs in this book.
Yeah, and even though it's in the future, that doesn't mean, I kind of like this aspect of it, just because it's in the future, people haven't really politically developed that much.
Yeah.
It's still a monarchy. Things like democracies and all that shit didn't fly. It's just ruling families.
Yeah.
Called the Lance Rod.
Yeah.
There is an emperor that oversees him, but he's kind of a puppet.
It's like futuristic medievalism.
Yeah. The emperor, in a way, is a puppet. His power is based in space travel. That's what holds the empire together. And for space travel to happen, they have to have spice. All right? And this spice only comes from one planet called Dune, and it's basically the shit of these gigantic worms. Now, the Transportation Guild that does all the space travel needs that stuff. They inhale it, and it allows them to see slightly in the future. And when they can see slightly in the future, it allows them to kind of plot a course through dimensions and allows them to fold space. They don't actually travel. They just jump around, or they jump around space, almost like some poltergeist-type stuff that you see from, you know, in poltergeist-type cases where there's asportation and apportation. That's basically what they're doing. But it's quite cool, actually. The concepts are very cool. They didn't solve any of their problems really with technology per se.
Yeah.
They had some technology, but it wasn't computer-based.
And like I said, I think that's why the book is, you know, rightly considered a classic. It's a really cool concept.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't think that there's anything that's unfilmable. I know people have said that about certain books and stuff like that. I know some things be very difficult,
yeah,
and maybe you'd have to change a lot of things. But like I said, I don't think that it's any more, you know, I just feel like something good can be made of it, but maybe not a movie. Like it would have to be, like I said, a trilogy or a series or something like that. Because like I said, the concepts are not hard to understand.
Frank Herbert was an ecologist, really. I think that's what his real training was. And he was good at making a world.
Yeah.
I read a lot of his books, like Lazarus Effect, you know, when I was a kid. He made good science fiction, but it's not all of it was movieable. Some of the stuff happened within inside of a spaceship and then flying through thousands of years. And most of the book was him describing a world or a situation, you know, in terms of ecology,
right,
how it worked. And that's really what Dune was really about. It was this interstellar civilization that was a monarchy held together by something so simple as like the shit of these alien worms. Without that, they couldn't travel space, and that's what they needed to hold the empire together.
Yeah.
And that was that was kind of the downfall of this empire in the end when you go through the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a really cool line out of the movie. It's, he who controls the spice controls the universe. Every single line of dialogue in this movie is a meme. And I've heard it used in like techno-industrial music from clubs and stuff. Remember that?
Yeah.
Who controls the spice,
yeah,
controls the universe. And
well,
because everything is so grandiose and big and so space kabuki, it lends itself well to that.
Well, yeah, like I said, everything is like a huge grand pronouncement.
Yeah.
It's funny, as reviled as this film is, it still seems like it has a big cult following.
It's cool. It's a cool flick.
I mean, and it maybe has a cult following because
of
it's
that.
So reviled.
It's weird, yeah.
It's weird. It's like, I don't know. I don't know if I'd call it a bad movie in the way that, like, you know, Birdemic is a bad movie.
No way.
It's like I said, it's just a confusing movie.
Yeah.
And you said something earlier that I think I agree with. I feel like the movie should have, you know, because we were talking about the whole, the little part at the beginning where they, you know, had this all this fucking exposition dump, like at the beginning where they had to explain everything. I think that the movie would actually work better, and maybe this is counterintuitive, I think it would work better if it was less was explained.
Yeah, if you knew less and just allowed people to marvel over what was happening, probably
would be better. Well, and also, I think, too, anytime I see that kind of thing in a movie where there's this huge exposition dump and stuff like that, I always feel like whoever made the movie is not trusting their audience. Right. Like, they think that their audience is idiots. They have to explain everything. I think
there was some of that,
or
too.
They're afraid that people are not going to understand it. It's like, you know, just hang it out there.
Let
things happen and people will figure it out.
They were stuck in a certain situation, I think. If you were to take Dune and try to dumb it down into a space opera adventure, kind of like Star Wars, it wouldn't have a lot of adventure action in it because there isn't a lot of action in the the book. So, which would mean that you'd have to focus on some of the battles that happened and some of the individual fights. The problem is in the book, the battles aren't clearly described for the most part, you know? So there wouldn't be much Dune in the movie. It would just be kind of an action movie and, you know, made up by a... what the fuck?
All the cats are in here yelling.
Okay. Get out. Where was I? Yeah, there's not a lot of action in the movie, so you can't really turn it at the level of like a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, it's most nothing
of the
like
movie,
that.
Most of the movie was political intrigue.
That's what I was just going to say.
Politics and things like that.
Which a good movie could be made from that. But.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can't pack all of that into one movie. It has to be a trilogy.
I kind of feel like now, am I remembering it wrong? Am I high? Wasn't there like a TV miniseries?
Yeah, it sucked.
It was closer to the book though, right?
Closer to the book.
I vaguely recall
the acting and the costumes and the look of it were just the worst. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that this Dune got right. The look and the feel of the movie is fantastic.
It is a gorgeous looking movie.
That's what Frank Herbert was talking about in the book. You know what I mean? The uniforms, the outfits, the way the inside of the castles looked, the way the inside of spaceships looked. I mean, just, you know, it looked right.
Yeah.
It looked and felt right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is definitely the best thing about the movie is how it looks. And like I said, all the actors are good.
Yeah.
I mean, Patrick fucking Stewart is in it.
Yeah. And it spawned one of the best video games of all times, Dune Emperor.
He loves this video game.
I love that. It's an old video game. It's kind of like Command and Conquer, I think the name of the newer version of it.
Yeah.
And it's all done in the Dune motif. And it's just, it's
you know
it's
what? Awesome. You know, when you used to play that all the time, like, he used to play it so much that I used to hear the little sounds.
The soldiers going, reporting.
Reporting, like in my sleep, because it was just over and over and over. It kind of reminded me of, have you ever played that video? This is showing my age, but have you ever played that video game called Populous?
Yeah.
Where you get, it kind
I haven't
of
played it, but I know which
it
one.
It kind of reminded
it's
me
like
of that.
It's like that.
It's like you're kind of taking a bird's eye view.
Yeah, of
like
the battlefield.
Little,
and of battlefields, all about,
and you can move shit around.
Yeah, it's about, you know, going out and sending your harvesters out to the field to mine spice, to bring it back. To build spice refineries and then, you know, things that make tanks and machines and barracks. And you're making an economy to produce an army to fight another royal house.
It's kind of a cool game. It's pretty old, though. I mean,
old, yeah.
It's
90s.
Cool. Yeah, it's a 90s game.
I can't even play it on new Windows.
Yeah, that's right. And another thing I should mention, too, is that this always kind of made me laugh because I remember when this movie came out, which was 84, right? It came out in 1984. I remember a lot of the commercials for it and a lot of the posters and stuff like that had fucking Sting on there.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, you know, I was really into the Police at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, Sting's in it. Maybe I should see it and stuff like that. Sting is in it for like 2 minutes.
Yeah. And Sting can act. If you see Brimstone and Treacle.
Oh,
you can
we
see,
definitely can, have to do that on this. I love fucking Brimstone and Treacle.
He can act and he does play an important role in this movie. A role that's never really shown. And he doesn't really do anything until the very end. In the book, Fade Rautha did stuff.
Yeah.
He had a character. But in the movie, Fade Rautha is really
he's hardly in it.
He's hardly in it.
And really,
he's one of the coolest Sting look. And it's one of the coolest appearances of Sting in the movies. His outfit and everything. His hair. He looks good.
That one, I was watching another review, like two British guys, and they were watching Dune, and they just like could not stop laughing at Sting's winged underpants.
That was awesome.
Winged underpants.
The weird thing about the Harkonnens were kind of like, I think they were supposed to be an analogy for the Russians, I think. It's hard to tell. Maybe they were an analogy for the Americans, but they were kind of, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen was kind of like this an aggressive warrior homosexual leather daddy, basically.
Yeah.
And he had like some things going on with his nephews.
They were very decadent.
Real decadent. They were into kind of like snuff porn. And like in the book, one of Fade Rauta's punishments is that he had to, because his uncle didn't like the fact that Fade was into girls. He screwed up one time, so he sends Fade to his personal brothel. So Fade, kill all the females in your personal brothel as punishment. So that's what he had to do. And that was like 100 of them.
That's harsh.
So he went down there with a knife and killed about 100 of them with a, you know, in his personal brothel. They had stables of people that they would give to
like
other.
Like you do.
Yeah, they would give to other people as rewards and stuff. But that was just the Harkonnens.
Here, have a girl as a present.
The Harkonnen economy had a lot of slave labor in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was legal for them. Weird.
So if you were going to make, let's say that I feel like Netflix should fund a series of this.
Yeah.
I feel like if they got the right writers and I think it could, I mean, if it had the same kind of look.
It has to look exactly.
As the David Lynch movie, because I think the look of that was really good.
It has to be kind of dark. It has to have that looking technology. It has to have that feel to it. If you did it that way, it would probably work. The problem is that Dune has been botched so many times, consumer confidence would be at an all-time low.
In a way, though, that might work in its favor because
really
people wouldn't be expecting much.
Yeah.
And then if you tuned in and it was, like, really brilliant, then everybody would be like, holy fucking shit.
And it would have to take its time, and they would have to invent a bunch of dialogue because the dialogue isn't there in the book.
Yeah, and no voiceovers.
There's very little dialogue in the book, so you'd have to invent a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And then from whose point of view do you tell it? Do you have to tell it from Paul's point of view? Do you change the point of view? Because in the book, the story would be told from Paul's point of view and also Fade Rauta's point of view.
Well, you could do it, but you can sometimes have multiple viewpoints, especially in a series. I mean, they do that in a lot of shows.
Yeah, at least that was from memory. I may be wrong. I read that.
And like I feel like now.
But I remember that Fade Rauta, I think also things were told from his point of view. Because they were kind of like, they were direct competitors. They were about the same age in the book.
Right.
They were like the
which
next
they didn't
upcoming
really
generation.
Pick up on that in the movie so much, that those two were kind of counterparts.
Yeah, and they were both replacing their fathers.
Right.
Okay. Or, well, not so much. Fade wasn't replacing his father. He was replacing his uncle. But same kind of deal.
Because, like I said, I feel like because, you know, Netflix and Showtime and HBO and stuff like that have kind of shown that they're willing to do these complicated, like complex series with all these like intertwining characters and storylines and all this other kind of stuff. I feel like that would be a good thing for a reboot, especially because it's never been done well.
If you did it, you'd have to do it kind of like The Walking Dead is done. You do it real slowly.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a bunch of like side missions. You know,
that's what I'm imagining.
And it doesn't end until years from now, seasons and seasons and seasons. So the first couple seasons.
Yeah, because there's so much material there that you could work with.
The first couple seasons, Paul Atreides would still have to be on Caladan for several seasons, you know, getting ready to, you know, and then the stuff happening with the Emperor and Duke Leto and getting, you know, which the people, if, you know, I feel like I'm kind of stepping into deep water because a lot of the audience probably doesn't know who it is I'm talking about. Although maybe I do. They don't know who Duke Leto is. That was Paul's dad.
You can Google it.
You have to see the damn movie. If you see the theatrical cut, you can kind of get you can get an idea of what the movie is about. And if you have any questions online, there's a lot of people that talk about it. They can answer it.
Yeah, there's tons of reviews and stuff like that. Pretty much all of them negative. I think the only one I saw that was that was more even-handed was Oliver Harper, like Oliver Harper's movie retrospective.
Yeah, I respect
his actually, you know, he said, yeah, it was kind of a mess and stuff like that. Like, you know, it was the story was kind of jumbled, but he actually did enjoy the movie and he does own it.
Yeah, don't for one second think this is a Roger Corman flick. It's not a flick. It's a film.
Yeah.
You know, it's really expensive. You can tell that they spent a lot of money on this thing.
Yeah, they did.
And the acting is very good. It was not a cheap movie. It's just that it's not movieable in that script.
It's just confusing.
Very confusing,
all.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think that was its downfall. One, it takes itself a little bit too seriously, maybe.
Yeah.
And two, it's just... They needed to, if they were going to make it one movie, which I think is a bad decision to start with, but if you have to, then streamline it. You know what I mean? You'd have to streamline it because you just can't cram all of that into one movie.
No,
you can't.
No. I can understand the problems that they were in. You know, I mean, they're telling the director to put that whole story into a movie.
Well,
and try to get it all in there.
The whole experience was actually, that was what soured David Lynch on doing big budget movies. And this was interesting bit of trivia, and I actually didn't know this, but David Lynch was offered this movie. Mm-hmm. He was also offered Return of the Jedi.
Wow.
Which I would fucking love to see that. Can I go to an alternate universe where David Lynch made Return of the Jedi? Yeah. I got to see that shit.
Yeah.
So he took this one and he now says in interviews, he doesn't really like to talk about Dune because he really didn't like how it turned out. He said, you know, even from the beginning, they said, well, you're not going to be able to get final cuts. You're not going to be able to do what you want to do.
Ridiculous, yeah.
And he's like, so I should have said no, but, you know, whatever. I ended up doing it. And then he took his name off of it and doesn't talk about it. And after that, he went his own way. He just made his own movies. It's like now he just...
Soured him forever.
Yeah, he's just like, I just don't want to do that anymore. Because David Lynch, he's very idiosyncratic. Filmmaker, his shit is not for everybody, and I feel like he does not work well under constraints.
Yeah, well, you know, they're going to give you that story and say execute that story in an hour and a half.
And he wrote the screenplay also.
Yeah.
So,
although you know, had they said, look, here's the story, we're going to give you 3 hours. This is going to be a 3 hour movie, or maybe 2.5 hour movie. The movie would have ended up being a lot better. Because I think 2.5 hours is probably enough to tell that story.
Like I said, it's not
the extended version that I bought really was not made from a movie that was intended to be 2.5 hours long. It was made up of the little trimmings and snippets that were thrown away to try to get that thing down to a certain size. It's just insane.
Well, and like I said, it's not like it was unheard of for movies to be that. I mean, look at fucking Ben-Hur. Wasn't that like 3.5 hours long or some shit?
They had to do something about the water.
They could have done it like a biblical epic.
One of the things that David Lynch did, which was he had to get away from the book, is that he had to invent a scene which covered 3 or 4 different storylines to save time.
Yeah.
And it had to do with Paul taking the water of life. The one where he takes the water of life and the sandworms come up and they're kind of like paying homage to him. That scene kind of tied in a bunch of things and saved him about a half hour.
So, and they did that later in the rewrites, because I think he did several versions of the script.
Right.
Because they had to, I mean, like I said, the first version he wrote was like super long, and they were like, yeah, no, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
But in a way, it's like, I don't know, I find it hard to sit through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard for me to watch just because...
The last time you sat through it, we were watching that extended cut.
Yeah.
The theatrical cut is not as hard to watch.
That's true.
I love the theatrical cut, but I grew up with seeing that movie.
Yeah.
So I just accept it for its faults.
See, I had always seen...
And it's kind of like watching a Bible story for me, you know what I mean?
It is kind of like that.
That feel to it, and take it for what it is.
I don't think I ever saw the theatrical cut until recently, because I always saw the TV version.
Yeah, the TV version evidently had some cool scenes in it, but... They say that was also a mess.
I don't think I ever just sat there and watched it, like, on TV. Like, I would watch it for, like, an hour, and then I'd wander off and
probably wasn't that bad when it was interrupted by commercials, because you didn't realize how choppy that would feel.
Yeah, that's true.
It jumped around a lot.
Because even when I was rewatching it, like, I remembered some scenes, but I didn't really remember. Yeah. Like I don't remember ever sitting and watching the whole thing.
There was one scene I remembered from the TV cut. I've never seen it again, but I watched it on television. And that was where the, I forgot his name. Shit, what's his name? He was the Harkonnen Mentat with the crazy eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw him. He killed a sandworm.
That's Brad Dourif, right?
I think
the actor?
Yeah. He killed a sandworm by putting it in water so he could get the juice of Safu out of it. And I never, you know, and I can remember that worm was, I think it was him that killed it. It's been a long time since I've seen it. And he killed that sandworm to get the water out of it. It was weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird flick. I still recommend it. If you've never seen it, check out the theatrical version of it. It's an interesting
watch. But it helps to read the book first.
It helps to read the book, but just sit
or
back.
Or at least read like a plot synopsis.
Yeah.
On Wikipedia if you don't have time to read the book, because it's kind of a long book.
I would just kind of just say the movie's a trip. Check it out.
It is kind of.
Yeah, it's a trip.
Yeah, maybe drop some acid and watch it.
Yeah, drop some acid.
It'll make sense then.
The sleeper must awaken. There's all these like one-liners in there that just, you know.
I feel like it needs like,
out.
Yeah, and didn't it have kind of a prog rocky kind of soundtrack too, wasn't it?
Was
it
Brian Eno, I think.
Brian Eno and Toto.
And Toto, yeah.
Did the soundtrack.
Although you can't really tell.
I like the music.
It sounds good,
though. Yeah, it's cool. It's very epic.
The movie was almost a hit. Had it been done right, you know what I mean? Like, it had the makings of a really good movie.
Like you said, I think if they had taken a lot of it out.
No, it would have fallen, the story would have fallen apart. I had it explained to me by some people that worked on the movie in that one documentary. And I see what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They had to get the story to work, they had to, first of all, make the Water of Life scene. And without that, things kind of fall apart. If you took things away from it, it had a bare minimum amount of scenes to make sense.
Yeah.
If you take anything away, then it doesn't make any sense at all. So I think they did as good as they could. The problem was the time constraints. I've said it over and over again.
Yeah,
if they had 2.5 hours or 3 hours, they could have told the story a lot better.
Or a trilogy.
Yeah.
Or
a series. That'd have been the way to do it. Do it a trilogy.
I think that would have been a lot better. Okay, that'll do it for our review of the critically reviled Dune.
Yeah, critically reviled, great and legendary Dune.
Though. Yeah, but it still has a lot of
still has a good
supporters,
charm.
And it still has a lot of.
Yeah. It's like samurai kabuki in space, man. Old Testament style. Yeah, with Muslims and Jews and Christians running around in it. You'll see.
Except not called that.
Except they're not called that. They're like what they evolve into thousands of years from now.
All right, so if you enjoy the show, please remember to support us on Patreon or go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and give a one-time donation if you would like to do that. There's a little link in the sidebar. So remember to tune in for our regular show on Tuesday, and we will see you next time. Bye.